and welcome to the Trash Tapes Podcast as part of the Enigmatic Productions Network. If you love bad cinema and incredible deep dives into cult film, then you have come to the right place. So if you like what you hear and want to support us, you can do so by donating some funds to our Buy Me a Coffee website, along with the Acast supporter feature. All of these can be found in the description below. And now, on with the show.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Oh, man. So, yeah?
It's,
that is Hopo with a shotgun.
It's batshit crazy.
I knew it. I knew you'd like it. It is the most, one of the most schizophrenic, like, movies I've seen in so long.
It's like, it doesn't have, like, the only consistency it has is the fact that it's batshit crazy. Because there's lots of, like, inconsistencies going on all the time. It's like, it can't decide what it wants to be. But then other times, it's like, it's going to do this, it's going to be crazy. That's what I'm going to be.
It's going to do this shit. Then we're going to do this shit. And then we're going to be nice for a while. And then we're just going to be fucking... Let's have... Oh, I think the topless, like, mutilated piñata shit still wants the top. And,
yeah.
All right. So, yeah. That is Hobo with a shotgun. And I think we have a lot to talk about.
Yeah. Stop it there.
Yeah.
Boys? Boys? Stop watching that trash!
One man's trash is another man's torture. Starring Johan Chappal as the inflictor of pain, and Edward Harvey as the victim. From Studio Enigmatic comes the Trash Tapes.
Hello, and welcome to the second episode of the Trash Tapes, where one man's trash is another man's torture. And this torture is usually done by my victim, Edward Harvey, in this case.
Hello.
And I am your host and considerably the inflictor of pain, Johan Chappal.
The inflictor of pain.
Flippin' love that. I'm so glad that you did. When I heard the opening for the first time when you did that, I thought that was so good.
For some reason, I've got this knack of being able to do the trailer guy voice. And like my girlfriend, Sophie, is like, why can you do that voice? It's so weird that you can do it. It's like an out-of-body experience.
Because it doesn't sound like you at all. It sounds like someone else completely. It's so awesome.
But yeah, I just discovered one day I could do the one man voice just really well. And obviously when you record it well and you've got you really close to the microphone, if you can do that tone, it's going to sound even better, like on the mic, you know.
It sounds so perfect and it's ideal for this kind of show. So, yeah, as people who've maybe tuned in for the very first time, welcome. This show is where I, Johan Chappal, basically go through piles upon piles of trashy movies and inflict them onto my friend over here, who I literally go over to his house, get some snacks, and just barrage him with whatever I find that week.
Yeah. And I haven't seen this. I mean, there's some trashy movies I've seen, but there's a lot I haven't, and Johan has just seen them all.
I've seen a lot of them. There's still some I haven't, but I'm discovering new ones every single day. The moment I've started this podcast, I'm now finding new ones I haven't heard of before. And some of these are like, Wow. And just the research on this is actually becoming more enticing every single day. I want to find the weirdest stuff. So I'm actually hoping that maybe if this all kicks off, that maybe some of the fans out there can start suggesting a couple of these. Because I feel like we could be doing this for centuries, and I doubt we'll still cover every single rubbish, trashy movie. Like,
yeah, because you've wrote out a list, haven't you, of like possible episodes, and it's so long already, isn't it? Like
every time I find a new one and add it on, at the minute we're about 120. Yeah. Like my God, we could be here for.
We're never going to be scratching our heads saying, "What shall we watch?"
I'll just go through the list, and it's like a cartoon list. It feels like you drop it and it just tumbles all the way down to the other side of the room.
Yeah.
So, as a second episode, I did kind of tease at the end of the first one after we did Troll 2, which was a corker to start off with, that I was going to end up, we're going to go something gory next.
Yeah.
And so, the one I decided to go is the one which I think is the most batshit crazy of all the gory films, I think, out there in a while, and that is a hobo with a shotgun.
Yes.
Maybe. You may not like me.
As we usual now, we're going to... let's talk a little bit about Hobo with a Shotgun in terms of how what it is and how it got started. Because there's a good, interesting backstory. A good thing about loads of trashy movies and the production of these kind of movies is that there's always an interesting backstory behind it. Mm. So I'll go for a few of them. Hobo with a Shotgun is a movie done in 2011. It is a Canadian movie, which you think, like, what the heck? And it's directed by Jason Eisner. Before then, he didn't really direct a lot of movies. He basically was doing short films and stuff like that until he won a competition. Now, the competition is the Grindhouse competition. Do you know when Grindhouse came out and it had all the fake trailers? Mm. There was a competition in South by Southwest where it said, like, we want you to make a trailer for it. And that trailer was Hobo with a Shotgun.
Yeah.
And that won, which means that in certain places in Canada and a few other theatres, that trailer was played in between all the other trailers. Mm. And that got so popular that they loved it. They absolutely loved it. They adored it to the point of saying, like, let's make it. So basically, it was through a competition that got this movie to be made, which is flipping great. You know, the original trailer did not have our star, because I don't think they could afford him at the time. Although we don't know, because I have to look into how much he's got into it. He was starring, originally, who played the hobo. Do you know the crazy ass cop? The one who's like, saying, like, we're all bad cops here.
Yeah.
Yeah. That was a hobo originally.
Right.
And then just...
In the trailer,
In the trailer, in the fake trailer. And then they just built it up, and suddenly now our trailer is Rutger Hauer.
Yeah, because you got to... When you do a feature and you want to get any kind of return on it, you got to have someone known, haven't you, as the lead?
Like, someone, yeah.
Yeah.
I'd be honest, before this, everyone knows... anyone who's a big fan of like films know Rutger Hauer is famous mostly for Blade Runner. He's done bits in between. He's done other things, but that's like his key moment.
One of my favorites is The Hitcher. I love The Hitcher.
Yeah. Oh, The Hitcher's pretty good. Yeah, I remember The Hitcher. Yeah. But you notice how from that point, you're like, now he's back in this movie, not looking at all like him at all. You're sitting there going, what happened?
Oh my God. There he is. That is Rutger Hauer. My God.
What has he done since?
This is the thing. I'll probably look it up later, but I don't know how much he's done.
Mm.
But, you know, this is being like, that's the guy from Blade Runner to now a homeless guy with a shotgun.
Yeah, it's like, oh, shit, I may as well just retire now. I don't want to do any more damage.
I'm done. Maybe this is partly a documentary. They just found him like this. So, you know, can we make a movie about it? Yeah, sure.
Rutger Hauer is such a pro, though. He would embrace anything. If this is his role, he's going to do it like the best of his ability. Like, and he's just going to nail it. You know.
And he's nailing it right now. My God, he's look. look at all his faces. The man, he looks like a man who's seen shit.
Yeah.
Oh, man.
Like, we have not heard a peep from him. And he doesn't even look, he doesn't look a thing like the sexy android that we know and love.
Yeah, because the thing is, like, his character in Blade Runner, he's so, like, charismatic that you kind of root for him and you understand him, and it's a confusing movie in that respect, because it's like you are really empathizing with the villain, aren't you? I don't want to talk too much about Blade Runner, but it has got the connection because
because he's so obviously there.
Yeah. But no, I love his character more than Harrison Ford's character in that movie.
Like, yeah, because he actually, it's one of those kind of, it's so well written, and almost to the point you're sitting there going like, do you know when the bad guy, like in most movies or even anything, you know when the bad guy's talking and you're saying like, you're almost like, it makes perfect sense. I get what he's doing. I get his motivation, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And he was one of them. And then you get that in your head. And this is kind of a thing for anyone who's a big fan of like any of his or Rutger Hauer's work. And then you see this. Shed anything you know about him at all.
The thing is, though, because of the time it came out, like all these millennial kids that might have not seen Blade Runner, just imagine if they saw this before all the quality stuff that he's
done.
And they'd be like, well, it'd be so weird for him. It's like one of my mates saw, in the back in the day, one of my mates saw Lethal Weapon, which one's the one with Joe Pesci? Three,
yeah.
He saw Lethal Weapon 3 before, like, Goodfellas or something like that. So it's like, he remember. No, and that, and also, like, Home Alone. He'd saw before, you saw Joe Pesci in his original kind of, like, form.
Yeah,
where
yeah.
He'd be, like, a bad, like, terrifying gangster. Oh, and, like, God. Just imagine seeing it the way around. So you see, like, Rutger Hauer in this movie before you see Blade Runner, Hitcher. And it's like, you'd think that's your opinion then, set in stone, of Rutger Hauer.
And then you go back going like, oh, he's just the homeless guy. And they're like, no, he's so not the homeless guy. Oh, my God. That's basically what I love about this, is like he's basically the central force of this movie. And he's so good in this. But he's good in a way that you never even thought he could do.
No.
Like, it's not like, this is not like top ace acting. What he does do is embrace this complete batshitness 100%.
Yeah.
You can kind of see at times, it's like a combination of both. I'm not sure if you thought the same way, but half of this I felt like he's very into it. And he's enjoying the hell out of it. But then sometimes he looks very tired.
Yeah.
And surprised that he's doing this.
But what's so, like, amazing is the fact that he plays the role so straight. Like, he's not at any point, like, hamming it up. He's like, he plays it really straight, doesn't
yeah.
he?
Yeah. And I think that what adds to the comedy, the dark comedy to this, basically, that every time he says something, he's not doing it tongue-in-cheek, he's not looking to the camera, he's not doing that. He's saying it like it's almost Shakespeare.
Yeah.
And it is awesome.
You and vultures circle this city, tearing off the flesh from everything that is innocent. Please don't shoot me. I didn't even hurt her. I want you out of this city. You and your grave-robbing friends. Spread the word. Now!
The best way to describe the plot of this movie is actually looking at the back of the DVD.
Yeah.
And I'm just going to read this out. Because probably the best way I can describe this.
Should also mention the cover art is gorgeous. Really good.
Look at the poster for this.
Yeah.
It looks like literally like an old 1980s sort of stained poster has been left in the back of like a theatre for years. It's properly a grindhouse thing. They've embraced the grindhouse-ness of this 100%. Mm. When an aging hobo, played by Hauer, jumps onto a freight train in a new city hoping for a fresh start, he soon realizes he has well and truly reached the end of the line. He finds himself trapped in an urban hell, an archaic world overrun by murderers, rapists, petty crooks, and corrupt cops. Now it's up to him to clean up the streets the only way he knows how, with a 20-gauge shotgun in his hand and 2 rounds in the chamber. With the city's evil crime boss standing in his way, will the hobo's own brand of justice prevail?
That's the thing. He had a far amount of ammunition, not just 2 shells. He had like $50, right, to pay for this shotgun. How do you pay for all the ammunition?
I don't know where he's getting all the ammo. I don't know how the fuck he's getting all the ammo. I think the moment we start going there, it's like, what the fuck? I think maybe our shotgun's like Lara Croft's, like, infant pistols.
Yeah.
It's just, I've got all the ammo, baby.
Right, we have to go back to the roots then. So, he comes in at the very beginning. He comes in on the freight train at the very beginning of the movie. And your reaction to it the first time around was amazing, because it literally was like, oh my God, this is so colourful. That's the first thing you're going to notice when you watch this movie. It is very colourful. Yeah. And I'm not talking like, you know, ooh, it's more like there's whole rooms that are blue. There's whole rooms that are yellow. There are whole rooms that are pink and red and like who's ever like the design of the film and the lighting must have had a whale of a time saying, I want everything to be neon. I want everything to be fluorescent and to glow.
Yeah.
It is very fucking pretty.
The colour grade is so bright.
I knew that would be the first thing you'd notice. It is the most ridiculous. You'll figure out the rest of the movie. It is the most overly saturated film I have ever seen. I mean, that red is like the most red car I've ever seen.
Do you think it is actually Technicolor, or it's just made to look like that?
I think it. Well, that is as bright as you can get, so. God, that was nasty. Do you remember when we talked about how saturated this movie is? Half the corner of a road is green. Look at that.
So much smoke.
Oh, like, this clearly has a ventilation problem, whatever this place is. But my God.
Well, what I love about the movie is it doesn't exactly ease you in, does it? Like, the first scene is probably one of those memorable scenes in the movie, because, like, I just love the way it opens with the whole sort of this crazy thing is happening, and this, like, this they're after this, like, guy that's done something to them, I don't know, whatever, but you're introduced to these, like, gangsters.
Yeah.
Which the main one is, like, look in a Scarface suit. There's lots of cliches going on. And then you've got this victim that's just caught up in this like manhole cover.
The manhole. Okay, we have to start all this quickly. The manhole death is the most unique thing I think I've ever seen.
Yeah.
So this guy, you first see this guy who happens to end up being the bad guy's, whose name is Drake, who looks, you know, Scarface kind of guy. And we're not talking like Al Pacino Scarface here. We're talking 1950s kind of proper mobster kind of thing. And so the guy, so he basically got this manhole around his head, this guy who happens to end up being his brother. So if that's what he does to family members.
Yeah.
Fuck. Yeah. And so they come in and he does this thing with a manhole. Where he's got a manhole around his head, they throw him into a manhole cover, and then just decapitate him, like right there and then. And that is literally in the first 10 minutes. So this, like I said, this movie doesn't ease you in at all. It's not like a first date. No. This is more like a really rough and ready one-night stand.
But it sets its tone so quickly, because it's like, not only does, you know, a creative decapitation happen with like barbed wire around a head, man trapped in a manhole cover. It's like the woman that's with them just ends up like dancing in like sort of a bikini in the blood that's shooting out of the decapitated like hole.
It literally is like randomly this woman just walks out of fucking nowhere and just goes like, hey, blood, starts dancing in it, like swimming in it, going,
So immediately when you see that, you think, okay, I know what I'm in for now. This is just going to be,
going to be, like you say, batshit crazy from the off, and there's no, it's not, nothing's going to stop it. It's just going to be insane.
I'm a fucking miracle worker because I am
going to
make it rain.
Oh, yes! Here we go! Oh, that's nasty!
God's sake!
Oh my god! That. Okay. The head decapitation thing is awesome, right? I don't get the blood hooker though.
It's just ridiculous. It's like purposely ridiculous.
Oh. Which is like, once she's all in white, she walks in and she's like, I'm just gonna dance.
But this is just like, you know, a parody of like, in a lot of like 70s and 80s action movies.
Yeah.
The villains were ridiculously violent, like, and, like elaborate as well. Like, a display of like, I'm going to be so violent now and do this. And,
yeah, and this is exactly what that is. But I have never seen something that creative before. Like, that's kind of ingenious. Just.
Yeah.
I just think that's all fine until the blood hooker came.
It's like in Total Recall when Arnie breaks out of his restraints.
Oh yeah.
Jabs what like a pole in someone's face.
Yeah. And then like, and then an axe and like
so violent.
Oh my god, it was awesome. And we don't get that much anymore of this. So it's kind of nice when a movie wants to do a bring that back kind of thing.
It kind of tells you, like, if you can endure what happened in the first 10 minutes, you're going to like the rest of it.
Yeah.
If you don't like anything like that, it literally tells you to switch it off, almost. It tells you, like, nah, you can't handle the rest if you think that is it, because that's tame!
Well, interesting thing I want to add, I didn't tell you about this, I was saving it for the podcast. I have seen a bit of this movie before, when it came onto Netflix first time round. And I was one of those people, when the first time I watched this, I saw the opening scene, and I didn't know anything about the movie at that particular point. I didn't know what it was about and what it was kind of like. There was no build-up, basically, of like telling me about it and thinking, that you got to stick to it. I just put it on, saw that, and I thought, what the fuck is this? And I just thought, no, you know what? I'm going to turn it off. Because like now we're in the day of like if streaming. You don't have to commit to a movie. If you're not in the mood for it at that particular time, you just turn it off. And I was one of those people, like you said, that I saw that scene and I was like, nah, you know what? I'm not in the mood for this. I'm going to turn it off. So that's all I've seen at that opening scene.
Awesome. So does that mean then that now that you sat down with me, like semi-forced to watch the rest of this movie, have I swayed you now?
I am glad that I watched it all now because there are some great bits that I wouldn't have seen if I hadn't looked at it. And like there's just some awesome things that are introduced later on that, you know, if you do commit to it, you get to see those bits. So it's like
and they are really, really awesome. So he goes in on the freight train and he arrives and he goes into the town and. The city itself is literally the first reaction is everything's gone to shit and it's just been a few minutes.
Mm.
So there's the you get to actually meet all the mini antagonists, like all the side quests, like it was like in a movie, like in a video game, all the bad guys that you kind of get to meet along the way.
Yeah.
There's quite a few of them. We can go through some of them now. So one was my personal favorite is the pedophile Santa. So you introduce a pedophile Santa who is, the first time you introduce him, he's driving a car, laughing maniacally, like, ah, ha, 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 ha. And there's literally a kid in the back of the car going, help, help, help. What?
Yeah, I mean, like we were saying while we were watching it, if this movie wasn't so cartoon-like, it would be very offensive and not. It wouldn't nail it at all. It would be, it'd be like you'd just turn it off straight away, wouldn't you? Like every time.
It's there are like, moments where you're thinking like this could. I'm surprised I'm still going with this.
Yeah.
Because this really does push the bar in some of them. Yeah,
Yeah, there's a... Yeah, that was a paedophile Santa taking a kid away in a car. This is what this town is. Thank God.
It's like if you're a vigilante, you'd be like, well, where do I start? Freaking hell.
It's like there's, like, you know, like, what's your first kill? What's the first thing you do? It's like, fucking just turn left and you'll get something.
So one of the first steps he does is, oh, okay. So the first step after that, he goes to the arcade, which again, you can see how it starts topping up. So he goes to the arcade, and a lot of stuff is made to noticing as well. It's like it's very fucking 80s.
Yeah,
like all of its influential 80s, like every like arcade machines, like the two brothers, what the bloody hell were their names? Ivan and Slick.
Yeah. They just look like they're cliche 80s like goons, aren't they? Like
proper
with the Ray-Ban sunglasses, the baseball Letterman jacket type things they've got on, like jock jackets, aren't they?
Proper jock jackets, yeah. And they're coming round and doing that kind of stuff. Look, they've got the swagger. You've got Slick, who is like the sort of the pervert, and you've got Ivan, who is just, I think he's my favourite. He's the one who's going woo a lot and looks like he's constantly on coke. It's so 80s, and I love all the nods to the 80s-ness, like the VHS tapes, like random bits that you think might be a thing in this world, but they're not. Like, no one uses, like, all the mobile phones are, like, really 80s mobile phones. Like, or they use payphones instead of mobiles.
Is it supposed to be set in the 80s, or is it just, like, homaging the 80s?
I think it's homaging it, yeah. Because... It feels, because there are moments where you think, oh, it's quite contemporary, but it's not, the best way to describe it, it's not 80s enough to be 80s, but it's not modern enough to be nowadays. So it's like an alter universe, because not everyone's dressed incredibly 80s, or they're not showing like big hair, sunglasses,
it's
shoulder pads.
It's just the bad guys, really, that are incredibly 80s, isn't it?
Yeah.
Like, yeah.
And, you know, like, yeah, there are some bits, like, for example, the guy who's a filmmaker, like the crazy ass like hobo kill filmmaker, he's using this old sort of like VHS tape sort of thing, and all the phones are mobile. The mobile phones are the big bricks,
yeah,
and shit like that. But there's all these little homages that way. But you can't. There's no time period. It doesn't seem like it's like set in a time. It's just saying like everything's 80s. Thing is, by this point, loads of stuff happens. So Rutger Hauer goes into the arcade, and within 3 minutes, there's like 4 deaths. In 3 minutes.
Yeah.
So, again, if you're not seeing it coming, there's a lot of it. So, got a guy's... Oh, what was it? I'm trying... Here's the thing! I should have made notes.
Yeah, because there's so many, isn't there?
I think this is something we need to talk about in general. Like, there's so much death in this.
I think maybe just talk about the ones we remember the most, like the highlight deaths.
God, there is a showreel of all these deaths. First of all, you then got that teenager who's basically wanting cocaine. And he gets his arm, like, broken in half by...
The joystick. The arcade.
God! It goes, like, say, it's like, oh, do you want to play?
Yeah.
Just fucking breaks it in half. Like, it was so easy as well how he did it. Just like, bam! So that one is, there's like, the bumper cars. A lot of random guys out of nowhere. He's got that his head gets exploded, popped like a zit.
Yeah,
with two of these, like
that's the thing. The bad guys are so kind of like lawless that they just seem to like for pleasure just destroy people.
It just do. There is no remorse out of these guys, which kind of makes it adds to the whole cartoonish stuff because if there was anything, if there was no sign of remorse, but everything was realistic. You'd think, like, this is actually getting really uncomfortable. But because it happens literally every few minutes...
Yeah.
Like, after that head-popping scene, a guy's foot gets exploded with a mallet, and then arm gets broken, and then everyone's jumping into the pile of cocaine. The guy gets his head shoved into the cocaine and goes...
It's just nuts.
Okay.
It reminds me actually as well of like, you know, sort of crazy computer games where the bad guys are just like cartoon-like and kind of like and you don't really know much about them other than the fact that they're monsters and they kind of just want to kill people.
It's like these are the best way to describe it. They're like Streets of Rage villains.
Yeah, yeah.
They're like totally
extreme versions of that. Streets of Rage with like an R rating kind of thing.
Yeah, like you imagine this. So like you see later on, like they're coming in like on the side, about to come in, dropping a corner, they're getting ready to punch, and just instead of like just punching you, they just take out a machete and just chop off your head, because yeah. That's what they do. It's
but they do they did remind me of that, you know, like beat 'em up villains.
because they're so unrealistic, and yeah. I think. This is the reason why I enjoyed it, is because it is unrealistic. But even us, who love gore, who love, like, extreme stupid gore and ridiculous stuff, I think by the end of this movie, I think we had enough.
Yeah.
Like, we had our fill.
I wanted to add the point that I only really like gore when it's fake and silly like this.
Yeah.
You know when a movie's like actually looks realistic when it's just disgusting. Mm. When it's like realistic gore makes me feel very uncomfortable, and I don't really tend to watch many. Like it's like I never got the whole torture porn genre and stuff like that.
Yeah,
I don't
yeah.
like that kind of stuff. I do like gore if it's ridiculous like this.
Mm.
So yeah, it's just. I mean, what do you think about like? Do you like realistic gore? Or
thing is, I like gore in general because I think. The idea of gore is that you want a reaction out of it. Like, even watching this, and it's cartoonish, I still winced.
Yeah.
Like, I winced a lot. Maybe that's just me. Like, anything gory, I'm just like, I don't like it. But I love it, really.
Yeah.
Even when it's real, even if it's more realistic, I'm more terrified.
Yeah.
But I love the fact that it's done well, right? If gore's done well, I'm a big fan. If gore's done terribly, I just laugh at it and it's like, well, what's the point of that? You know, like, whatever. It's so if it's over the top, I have a good time with it. If it is realistic and it makes me genuinely uncomfortable, then it's done its job and I'm happy with it. So I'm happy with gore. I just think, like, it needs to be done with the right amount.
Yeah.
Like, if you had realistic gore and the whole movie was realistic gore, I would be switching it off in about 15 minutes because it's too much. Right. If with this being so cartoony, there were literally 5 deaths in about 10 to 15 minutes.
Mm.
So by that point, get your seatbelt on. Oh! Like a balloon.
What's so like sort of grim about this movie
is
of how cheap it looks. It just looks very cheap.
That looked like a watermelon just being popped. Oh, it's nasty.
Hey, Frank, you gotta check this out, man.
It's
fucking awesome.
Oh!
It's already been a minute, and already a man's head gets blown off, and the person's lost a foot. Now that's a gore level I wouldn't expect coming. Oh, sweet Jesus. Yeah, because cocaine does that to you instantly.
It's like, all that pain, just gone. Just gone.
All gone. You know how you just literally broke your arm? Fuck that, just smother yourself in cocaine.
Another check.
While she's
finger-banging you in
What a line!
From that point, all this, he goes and sees all this stuff in the arcade, and this is where we're first introduced to Abby, who is the hooker with a heart of gold.
Yeah.
Which is the another stereotypical sort of point there. I actually think that she's probably one of my favorite parts of the movie. I think she is really, really good in general. But the fact that her character is just, she's a hooker, but she's so sweet, and she's the only sort of at the beginning anyway, the only normal person in this town because everyone else is fucking batshit. Yeah. That it's nice when I can see her and go like, oh, finally, a regular human being. Good
yeah,
girl.
Although it's weird to begin with, though. You don't know how to feel about her to begin with because she's you know, a hooker, and she's sort of like just wants to get sort of like her money off that the horrible guy you're introduced
to. Yeah, slick,
to,
slick.
Like, slick, yeah. And because she's sort of like doesn't mind sleeping with him, at first you're thinking like, I know you're a prostitute and stuff, but like, I don't know how I feel about you if you're going to just go with that guy, you know what
yeah,
I mean?
It's like saying your taste kind of dropped, yeah. Doesn't it?
And I know that she's just like making a living or whatever, but it just at that particular point in the film, you're thinking, well, I don't know whether I like you yet, you know, like.
But that's the thing is like, this is her character, so like, oh, she's just doing this for the money. But then later on, we realize her real goals and so on. So this is the thing, like, for someone who's supposed to be like a very shallow character, she's the one that actually feels like she's got more of an arc, while everyone else is kind of just flatline, cartoonish, two-dimensional, crazy-ass shit. Since Rutger Hauer sees this, and he has, the one thing I love about this, Rutger Hauer has all the amazing looks.
Yeah.
He stares at them all the time, and when he's staring at something, he looks like he's seen death. It's like he's seen shit. It's like every Vietnam flashbacks.
And he can just do that with looks. You know, that's how much of a great actor he is. He can tell stories with just an expression in his face, you know, like
he raises an eyebrow and suddenly he tells you so much. Yeah. So he sees this happening and stops Slick and takes him to the police station. And this is when we realize that everyone's involved, not just like the bad guys, but everyone's basically corrupt. Like I was mentioning, we have the corrupt cop.
Yeah.
Who they're having a conversation with at the beginning. It looks like they're having some kind of conspiracy theory sort of chat. And then realize, no, everyone is in on it. Oh my God. And so
it's quite quickly that turns is great. Because, like, the first I was like, this is a bit weird. Like, the cop's really old for a start. Is it odd?
It's like a million.
And then, like, at first he's just, like, saying stuff like, yeah, I agree with you, mate. You know, it's like, it's like in the town's like fucked and I wish I could do something about it. And then all of a sudden he's like, yeah, but I'm bad too.
Ah. Oh, you get down on the ground, motherfucker.
Look, if I'm being honest, I can't argue with anything you say. Crime in this city has become an embarrassment. I've been suspecting that some of my boys are working with Drake. Can't see things getting this much out of hand unless some of my officers are giving that maniac a free rein. So thank God for honest people like yourself.
You better get those officers and send them packing. You can start this whole operation all over again.
Between you and me, I'd love to bring the wrecking ball down on Drake. You know, he might as well be king around here.
King's fall. You ought to read a history book, Chief. I gave you this little bastard, put him away for life.
Well, we're certainly going to see what we can do about that. By the way, did anybody officially welcome you to town yet?
I never do.
Well.
Welcome to Fuck Town!
And that means that, and then the two brothers just storm in, and just the first thing he does, they get a knife and just stab him and just write down the word scum on his chest.
Yeah.
And we generally thought like at the beginning of it, oh, he's dead now.
Yeah, because when you see that scene, the first like stab that goes in, that looks like it would kill him because it's like really seems deep.
It's deep. It's a deep cut, like legit.
Yeah.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
By that point, he bumps back into the hooker again, and they go to the apartment and gives him a jumper. That gives him a bear jumper. There's some things that I think are really nice and subtle, but I think we might miss the bigger picture. Mm. Like, for example, they reference bears a lot.
Yeah.
That went over my head. I don't understand all the references of bears. Why she likes bears so much. Don't know why. that's the point. Where...
No, sometimes we, like we've said before, we're watching like Troll 2. Sometimes we overanalyze. Sometimes there might not be a reason for that.
There might not be a reason. It's she just likes bears.
Yeah.
It's okay.
I just want to go to the zoo. We'll get to that.
Get to that. Oh, I just want to go to the zoo and see the bears with you. Oh, that's a romantic date right there after all this shit.
Fall asleep now. Hear it. There's one more thing I have to do.
No, I just want to go to the zoo and see the bears with you.
So they get to know each other, get acquainted, and he gets to sleep in a bed after a long time, and he looks really fucking comfortable in that jumper, this bear jumper, looking
so snug.
He looks so comfy, to the point that I'm convinced that he was legitimately falling asleep.
Joe, the only way to top that would be if he was in a bear onesie.
Oh my god, yes! He should have looked like a giant human teddy bear. I just go like saying, "You comfy?"
Yes. got a hot water bottle as well. Like, got a mug of cocoa and all sorts.
It's like, "Are you comfy?"
Yes.
And the thing is, imagine all that while he's doing his mini monologue about bears. Mm. So he's talking like saying, "Like bears are lone creatures." But also at the same time, like, you know, you don't want to piss them off and so on.
If a bear gets a taste of human blood, it becomes a killer. Like, he only wants to kill, like, men or something like that.
Yeah, and the thing is, like, by the time he says that, he's dozing off. So it just looks like, this is fucking bears.
Which, the funny thing is that she was like, I didn't know bears were, like, dangerous. It's like, bears are pretty dangerous. It's common knowledge.
They're fucking bears! I don't know, bears were dangerous. Okay. Did you always see a teddy bear and go, oh, they all must be this cuddly?
I think she's just watched too much Winnie the Pooh.
Winnie the Pooh and, what was it, Care Bears.
Yeah.
Oh, I used to watch Care Bears as a kid. I just think, imagine that she just thought Care Bears. That's literally all the kind of bears there are. At this point, it's been about 20 minutes in, and our hobo hasn't got a shotgun yet.
No.
So he goes to the crazy guy with the camera, who's like a sadist, and we don't know what the fuck he's there for.
No.
But he's a fucking sadist, and he's paying homeless people to do, like, nasty stuff. Like, in this case, eating broken glass. And
it's just disgusting. It's like, this guy is, like, the worst guy ever.
But that's the thing, is we say he's the worst guy ever. But then, just wait a minute, and then someone else is the worst guy ever. And then we wait somewhere, and then there's another worst guy ever.
Yeah.
Like, there's a list. We'll go through every of them eventually. So he goes out, he finally gets the 50 bucks. So he goes to 50 bucks, he goes to the pawn shop called, Pawn Till Dawn?
Yeah.
And he goes there and says, like, right, I'm finally going to buy this lawnmower. But then, obviously, with the music sort of being, like, very sweet, and finally getting up a bit, and everything's all nice, and then... fucking hell. Then what happens? Obviously, three people start to bloody rob the place, don't they? And it's just, it's so like, okay, right. Okay, there's people start robbing the place. And this is when he looks to the side and there's a shotgun next to him. and it's also $50. So he's contemplating, what do I do? Just staring at them like he's having like an internal crisis about lawnmower, gun, lawnmower, gun. And obviously, what does he do? He gets a flipping shotgun and just blows everybody away. And from that...
So, I think in I know it's a ridiculous situation and everything, but like, I think this character is... He should have like a I've got nothing to lose kind of thought in his head. So I think it would really, I think it would take him less time to just, to like, well, I may as well just kind of be a vigilante because I have literally got nothing to lose. But he's really clinging on to the whole lawnmower thing for a while, isn't he?
Yeah, he's holding on to it. Like, he's holding on to it. He's crying into it. It's like, God, I really want this lawnmower. This is my favourite thing. I want this. And then he's just like, but I can't just leave this crazy person who's holding a gun to a baby.
Like the baby's a threat, like, or something.
He's like, shut up, motherfucker. What? Okay. And so he finally gets a shotgun and blows everybody away. And, you know, and by this
point... Oh, that is so cool when is it the first one? He blows him into a load of VHS tapes. It's just... it's such an 80s thing, you know.
That should be our poster for the future. That should just be us, a man getting blown up to smithereens for a pile of VHS tapes.
Yeah. It's so uplifting at this point, isn't it? It's like he's finally getting that lawnmower.
It's like it's quite a sort of a contrast now and again. It's like it goes from very horrible, like nasty stuff going on to like.
This movie's kind of schizophrenic. Like, it'll do something really gruesome and nasty, then something really funny, and then something really sweet. And they are all legitimately all these things. But it's like, I'm getting whiplash.
Why does he want the lawnmower so much?
Because he can finally then save up money and have his own business. I think he wants to say, like, finally have a lawnmower. I can feel like a human being. Until a bunch of guys come in with guns and machetes. He's pointing a gun at the baby.
This guy, he is a great babysitter.
Now what does he do? That shotgun's $50. Yes!
Why is it loaded?
It's like, oh, of course, you know, we load up the guns right there. Oh, man! Ride the VHS tapes.
You.
Hey, guns! Get the change.
Great.
Oh, fuck.
I think that's the reaction anyone would have had if they saw that. Holy shit.
So now he's got his shotgun and everything is now officially on full blast mode. He goes on a rampage and literally, just like you expect, he goes around and shoots every bad guy. And we can go through the list. He finally goes and kills Pedophile Santa, which is the most ridiculous person, I think. He shoots the filmmaker and then tells him to eat his own tape.
Yeah. It must be so satisfying.
Oh, that was... When I saw that, I'm going, yes! Eat that tape, motherfucker! Eat that tape! So he goes, eats the tape. Then there is this weird-ass shit where there's two guys playing poker... Or snorting cocaine with three women being beaten up and hanging?
Yeah.
Like meat? And it's never been introduced before, and you never see this again. We have no idea what the fuck this is.
Yeah.
And Rutger Hauer just comes in and just blows them away.
Yeah. It's just some crazy... I mean, there are bits where there's stuff going on in the background that's very distracting.
Yeah. This happens a lot.
Yeah.
Throughout the entire movie, when something serious is happening... And this is like three or four times we've noticed this. Something very serious has happened, like there's a very serious conversation or something. There is some random ass shit just happening behind them.
Okay. What is happening?
What happened to you? School bully, get your lunch to jack-o'-lantern. Put your head on the table. Hey, Don, now! Don't worry, son, everybody.
Meanwhile, there is a basically topless pinata happening in the background.
It's so good. The amount of, like, the brainstorming that must have gone on in terms of, like, well, we've got to have some crazy stuff going on in this movie. What can you think of? And, like, they've thought there's some really creative stuff going on. Like,
I know, right? Like
the most horrible things you can imagine happen.
And half of them are, like, in the background or just randomly appear. And you're thinking, God, what's this town is fucked. Like, totally fucked up.
All the chaos is happening. Rutger Hauer is finally going through it. He's beating all up and so on and so forth. And so Drake is basically going to say, you need to scare the living hell out of these people, because they're now starting to believe how that one man with a shotgun, which actually shows that he's actually quite piss easy to take over a town, right? You just get one man and a shotgun can take over all the crime in the city. And it's like, so he does, like, probably one of the most nastiest things in the movie. Do you want to talk about that?
No, it's just, I mean, the thing is with this movie, it's like, you know horrible stuff's going to happen. And you think, well, how can it get any worse? But then, yeah, they just go, there's a school bus for the kids. They just go in with flamethrowers and just, like, burn all these kids.
I will admit, that was really, the way that was delivered up to that point is really funny. And literally tortures the entire fucking bus with Disco Inferno playing in the background.
It's just horrible.
But his expression was amazing.
Kids like school.
Hey, I asked you a question.
Do you kids like school?
Yeah!
What about ice cream? Do you kids like ice cream?
Yeah!
And bicycles?
Yeah!
And hobos!
I hate hobos!
It's finally escalated, and they basically go onto the news. They go onto the news and kill a guy with a fucking ice skate.
Yeah.
And go and say, like, right, we have an ultimatum. Kill every single homeless person ever. If you can kill all the homeless people for us, you know, this town will be safe. Everything will be ours. And Drake comes in with all these women, and you can have all my women!
Yeah.
And then it goes on a bloody rampage and everything goes to pot. And so he's trying to... So that this is where the plot starts getting... This is where the plot starts ramping up and starts getting more and more.
Because not only has he got, like, is Rook Howe's character got the criminals to contend with, he's got, like, the general public who now want to kill all the homeless.
Who are literally an angry mob.
Yeah. They have pitchforks.
Literally pitchforks and torches and... Everything else, they're literally like going, ah, as it were, and they're going batshit. And they're about to escape. And then this is where then the brothers go back and try and beat him up with what Ivan does it with ice skates. And the other guy does it with, like, a flipping.
So creative, though, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah.
Ice skates.
This is the thing. I'll say one thing about this movie. Every single death is incredibly creative. Like, if you think you can kill someone in one way, this movie will say, hold my beer. I'll chop this one up for you.
Why? That's a bit much. Oh!
He's hulking out.
Oh, that is extra toasty.
like, it's cartoon-like at times, isn't it? Like,
oh, that was, yeah, it's all, oh, God, I can't, oh, that's so distracting. Oh, my God. It is the most over-the-top thing. Oh, my God.
He made me come. Oh, my God.
He made me come!
What the fuck is going on in there? You better be killing that fucking hobo!
And so they have this sort of battle where Slick finally dies by getting a shotgun to the penis. Slick finally dies by getting a shotgun to the penis.
Yeah.
And so, God, it sounds so weird every time I say it. This is the thing. It's getting worse every time
it's
I
like
talk about
it. Duct taped. Is he's got his shotgun duct taped to his penis.
Again, creative. But it's so weird to say. Like, so he gets a duct... He gets a shotgun to the penis, getting duct tape. And the other guy, Ivan, gets electrocuted with a toaster with an ice skate. And he gets half his body, like, burned to a crisp.
He's just like... And he's like... He made me come.
It's like he gets off on this shit. Oh my God, it's so fucking ridiculous. Oh, it's awesome. I think what I love about this movie in general is that it gives literally no fucks. Everyone swears, everyone cusses, everyone's direct.
Yeah.
Everyone just sort of is 100% on board on this. And that's what makes it so great. Oh, oh God.
Have you gotten to the point now that the movie's so violent that whenever you do something violent, you no longer feel, like, fazed by it anymore?
Desensitized.
You're actually desensitized as the movie goes on?
Yeah.
So now it's like, oh, there's blood in this. Oh, homeless people burnt. You know, whatever. Whatever.
Yeah.
It needs to totally top itself in order to be shocking now. Like, really, like, oh, my God. God, don't show it.
I think, to be honest though, a shotgun that close range, it would blow a hole in that area. Not, it would blow your bottom half off, wouldn't it really?
Like, it would just be like a gaping hole from his front to his butt. Okay.
That's the bus to hell, obviously.
Oh, that's awesome.
And eventually Slick's like sitting in the phone booth, and he sits back and he realizes that death is coming for him.
I love that, actually. It's like the bus to hell.
That was so awesome. And then you see him there going, no! No! And again, you think like, and that's the only kind of moment actually that was like really sort of like, let's take you out of this moment to be almost supernatural, because nothing else was supernatural in this movie.
You can almost, like, picture Freddy Krueger on that bus, like in Freddy, like, 2, isn't it? Like,
I love it if Freddy is like, you just sort of, like, Freddy Krueger come out and says, like, it's time for your ride, Slick. All this happens, Slick dies, Ivan now is the only brother left.
Mm.
And he's now on again. He's on a vengeance quest to redeem himself. And so it's like, right. And then Draco's like, right, my favorite son is dead. And he says it right in front of his other fucking kid as well. Like, he doesn't give two shits.
No. I think we know by that point that he doesn't give a shit about anything.
Pretty much.
Other than that son.
Other than that son, who was an asshole anyway.
Yeah.
They're both asshole, but that one's like a real asshole. Now, here's an interesting thing, actually. I was just looking up on some facts. Drake was... There was quite a few people who were in the role for Drake.
Mm.
But there was one person who they were this close to getting. And I think as a wrestling fan, I think you'll like this. Jake the Snake Roberts.
Oh, my God. I would have loved that.
I know! Imagine just Jake the Snake. Just the way he looks like that. Just go like, what am I fucking dead? Need all these fucking homeless people dead. Playing around with a snake.
But I reckon they probably would have loved to have Jake as well, but Jake's a very unreliable guy nowadays, isn't he?
Yeah, he's kind of...
He's always messed up, isn't he?
Yeah. He was a little bit off the rails for a while. Yeah. I think now he's sober, thank God for him. But I think the movie needed another caricature. Because what I mean by caricature is, like, you've already got actors playing caricatures. Because all the bad guys are, like, literally the most ridiculous thing ever. Every bad guy from Pedophile Santa to Hobo Filmmaker to the weird, like, Coke Dens, the Pimps. They're all ridiculous cartoons. But I think we need an actual person, who isn't Rutger Hauer, who you can see and go like, holy shit.
Yeah.
That would work. And I think I would have been more on board with the rest of it. Because other than that, you don't really go full 100% with Drake.
No, because it's like normally in a movie, you get your hero is a known person and your antagonist is someone you know as well.
Yeah, and I think it was missing something. Mm. Like, I felt like it really needed that little extra something.
Yeah.
Just so therefore the movie was more fun. Like, I'm not saying the movie isn't fun. The movie has its moments, which is like, holy shit, whoa, fist pump, you know, and all that stuff.
Summon the plague. Tell them to bring me that hobo.
Now this is my favourite part of the whole movie.
Yeah, my favourite part is the plague as well. Like, they're introduced so late, but they're really, really charismatic characters. It's like, wow, these guys are amazing.
All right, describe who the plague are. Because they're very...
Well, they kind of almost seem like they're robots. They talk like robots. They're in suits of armour. and they just got like a collection of weaponry. And they're just really good with weapons and they're really creative with their kills and they just like seem untouchable, unbeatable and just like sort of action figures, aren't they? Like, yeah.
They're like Terminators, like pretty much. They're full-blown like knight's armor almost. And they sound like robots, like you were saying. Yeah. Like they're like robot gear.
Irreplaceable.
Oh my god. It's like.
No, replaceable, sorry.
Replaceable.
Not irreplaceable.
No,
the opposite.
The complete opposite of that. So we've got these two robots, basically, who look like they walked off the set of Mad Max.
Medieval Mad Max.
Perfect. They're medieval Mad Max, like, goons. They're driving on motorcycles with a coffin behind them. Oh, nice. Warm.
I think I'm a robot.
Sounds like a Dalek. Warm.
The thing is, though, these nurses and docs, they're not even really getting in the way. They're just kind of, like, there. And
it's like,
just...
oh, no! And just, like, bam! So the two robots go in, destroy the place!
Nurses, doctors, anyone that gets in the way. And sometimes people are not even in the way. They're just kind of there. And they just, no, I'm going to kill you in a really gruesome way.
Just grab them. And they grab them, like, they put them, like, on a noose and just launch them, like, into the fucking ceiling.
Yeah.
I mean, that was really cool. And I think that moment when the plague arrived is such a good, like, injection of, like, fun.
Yeah.
Because the movie was starting to get to a point it was no longer becoming fun. It was becoming just nasty.
Yeah.
And so the moment these two robots appear out of fucking nowhere, one that doesn't speak but sounds like a fucking, like, Dalek.
Yeah.
Wow.
Just makes like this is like loads of sci-fi sound effects.
Wow. You see, the homage to the 80s stuff, it all sounds like synth noise.
Yeah.
So so we go back again quickly and all this, and they capture Rutger Hauer, who does an amazing speech. I think that's supposed
to be a bunch of babies.
This, I think, was the speech that when they were doing it and they're writing it the first time around, I think this was going to be like, this is going to be your Blade Runner speed monologue moment. I'm writing this down for you. I think it's almost a new speech. This is your speech, right? And while it was awesome, I think it was a really, really fucking cool speech. you're distracted because the baby start crying more.
It's comical, isn't it?
You know. The baby start crying more and more and more. Asa told them, like, where, like, this crazy homeless guy holding a shotgun saying, like, you know, when you grow up, you're all going to be whores. You're going to be all junkies. You're
shooting up dope.
Shooting up dope on this with dirty needles.
In a bus stop.
Oh, my God. Or you might end up like me. And then he gets close to the window and pushes his face. I'll go with a shotgun.
And that's like cringe that he says the title of the movie. That's always a bit cringy in movies. You know, when that character, at some point, a character goes, I'm going to just announce the title of the movie.
Title drop.
A long time ago, I was one of you. You're all brand new and perfect. No mistakes, no regrets. People look at you and think of how wonderful your future will be. They want you to be something special, like a doctor. I hate to tell you this, but if you grow up here, you're more likely to wind up selling your bodies on the streets or shooting dope from dirty needles in a bus stop. And if you're successful, you'll make money selling junk to crackheads. And you won't think twice about killing someone's wife. Because you won't even know what was wrong in the first place. Maybe you'll end up like me. A hobo with a shotgun. I hope you can do better.
So yeah, so he does that awesome speech, and then obviously the robots come in and take him away, and they shove him in the back of a coffin.
Yeah,
being tugged away like at full force, at full fucking speed.
And this is another like Western type thing. You know, like in Westerns, when they attach like a rope to their leg or something of it, and then drag them along the dirt. Like.
Yeah, but I think that totally slipped my mind. Yeah. I never realised that. Mm. It's a little bit like, you've put every single movie that you think of when you think of this cup, Grindhouse, and put it all into a blender.
Yeah.
And you get and you just blend it in. But instead of like picking out the best bits, he just told you just to fucking chug it and hope to God that everything stays in there instead of throwing half of this shit out.
When was this made?
2011. Mm. So it's fairly recent, this version, but it already looks and sounds like one of these bizarre, like, Italian westerns.
Yeah, it's like, well, I suppose people like Tarantino inspired a lot of these kind of.
Oh, movies. Totally.
Yeah, because obviously, more like a more recent inspiration. Anyway, because obviously the original
in pure Technicolor. Yeah. So yeah,
the original, you know, B movies of the '70s and eighties, obviously the original inspiration, but like Tarantino sort of relaunched all that.
And say,
it?
Like, yeah. You know, these movies were secretly awesome, just no one's seen them. Mm. So we kind of need to thank... we kind of need to thank Tarantino for bringing back the love of Grindhouse, basically.
Yeah.
It's something we have to talk about as well quickly, because we haven't had a chance to. It's the soundtrack.
Cause yeah, it's good, but the only thing, like I've mentioned when we're watching it, there's some, like, a lot of inconsistencies. It's not, like... If it doesn't, like, it's not all like a synth soundtrack.
Which would have been awesome for this.
There's now and again, you've got some, like, random, like, sort of orchestral music going in there. Like, and then you've got sort of bits of, like, TV movie type music. And so there's a lot of inconsistencies with the score and lots of other things going on.
The whole movie's schizophrenic, though. Yeah. So I think it matches the craziness of the movie in general. But it is a little bit like whiplash. Like, you listen to something, and one, you've got, like, this suddenly really cool synthwave noise, and there's some really awesome synthwave tracks in this movie.
Yeah.
And then suddenly it's pan flutes. And you're like, okay. And then it sounds like something out of a Western. And you're like, okay.
Yeah, the opening is certainly like Western-like, isn't it? Yeah.
It's like a proper spaghetti Western opening. You know, him on the freight train, all the bright colours, and even the text feels a little bit like that. Yeah. So, but it's like, literally like a shot in the chest every time music or scene changes. Christ, that's a bit. Calm down. Chill. I mean, the ending. What do you think of the ending of the movie?
Well, it just I don't know. I think it ends fairly well. Sort of wrapped up.
Yeah.
I like the sequence. Like, eventually, the general public standing up for themselves and standing up for the hobo with a shotgun, and they're turning against like the cops, which is like which is great. And it's a good climax.
Yeah.
And then it just, I love the way, I mean, it just cuts off, doesn't it? And then the 80s music kicks in. And it's just like, yeah.
Because by this point, what it feels like is obviously Rutger Hauer is now getting involved in the manhole death thing. He's about to get involved by having robot number one about to drag his head off. But then Abby comes in, who looks fucking badass by this point. Like, she's got the thing, she's got the shotgun, she's got the lawnmower that she's about to just grind people down with, and kills one of the robots.
Yeah.
Like, by just shredding all the armor off into bits.
Was that with the lawnmower?
Yeah.
It's like, it's just the base of the lawnmower, isn't it? That she's got some kind of, like, it's like almost like a shield. Like, it looks like a shield.
Yeah.
But it's got the lawnmower blade in it.
Which is really fucking cool. Like, it's a really cool bit. But it's a shame because that part's only used once, at least in terms of that effect, by her.
Yeah.
It then gets weirder and nastier because then Drake goes, grabs her, and everyone's trying to, and it, basically everyone's foiling each other's plans, but they're all foiling each other's plans like really fucking quickly. And I think the movie then ends a little before the ending with probably the nastiest sort of like gruesome, gory moment, I think, out of the entire movie, really. It's the bit where
fingers, yeah.
Yeah, Abby's fingers get shoved into the lawnmower.
And it's like, it's not even being subtle about it. I know this movie's not subtle in any way, but like...
Subtlety is not a word.
Sometimes some of the gore, it cuts away, then you see it or something like that. But in that case, every moment is on camera. Like, you
the
see,
hand was getting closer and we all knew what was coming. And then suddenly you see her face like, ah! And then suddenly just fucking fingers flying. Her hand turns into a bony stump.
Yeah. And that looks very... That's one of the moments where it looks realistic, doesn't it?
Like, it looked nasty.
Yeah.
It was too much. I think that was a bit too much. And so she goes and gets like... And just stabs Drake multiple times.
With her spiky bone stump.
Oh... No!
That looked gross.
Oh, even the audience there is like, that's fucked up. And they're here to see a murder show. Oh, it's a fucking stump. Yes! That's what I call bad to the bone.
Did she stab him with her sharp, like a bone, basically?
Yes! She's just, I've got a stump, but I know how to use it. But there was definitely a time, but nearly by the end of the movie, where literally all this is happening. All the police arrive, the town and everyone else turns on the cops and everyone just fucking shoots everything.
Yeah.
It ends so abruptly when, you know, the 80s music just suddenly pops off. And by the end of it, you don't really feel like you've got any closure. You're just like, there it is.
Yeah.
And you're like...
I mean, I do like the fact that because the whole town seems like they're just on board with this. It's Drake, isn't it?
Yeah.
It just seemed like that. Yeah, we'll go along with it because we can't do anything about it.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden, they are doing something about it. They're turning on him. And that's a good point for it to end, I think. But like, yeah.
Yeah.
It does end like in an exclamation mark.
It's like saying, "Dirt." It's like literally a shootout where literally blood and guts, loads of people die. You know, Rutger Hauer's lying on the ground. you know, spoilers, he does die in this, or at least we think so, and it just pans up towards a shotgun. And you're thinking like, ooh, okay, we're going to then cut to like something more dramatic, and then suddenly just... Yeah. And you're like...
It's proper feel-good 80s music.
I know!
God.
Everyone just dies in a... in a blaze of glory.
And that's how it ends! Music.
It's, I'm telling you, oh God, it's so uplifting. Like, if you didn't see the movie before this and just heard this, you'd go into a club and go, cool, man.
Yeah.
But it ends mercifully in that point, right there and then, and allows you just to laugh everything off. Like, everything was a joke. Like, you sit back going, oh, relief. You finally got that moment of relief. Even though it's not closure, I felt like, finally, I can breathe.
Yeah.
I don't have to sit there anxiously waiting about what the next batch of crazy things about to happen next.
Yeah. No, I agree with that, yeah. Yeah, it's, I mean, there are moments to breathe in it where it's like, because we've said, like, when we're watching it, it's like a schizophrenic movie. There's moments where it's kind of sweet and stuff, and you're kind of going... Oh. You can't, those particular moments, and you can calm down for a bit, can't you?
Yeah.
But at the same time, it's really jarring, the fact that it's gone from, like, chaos to, like, this really sweet kind of moment.
It's literally like someone shouting in your face and then suddenly just giving you a hug and a whisper, going like, I'm so sorry for that.
But it reminds me of kind of something like, you know, like The Last House on the Left, when you got, like,
yes!
The weird
oh, my God!
The weird comedy cops and stuff.
Oh, my God, actually, the way we're talking, that's exactly what this is. Yeah. It's like Last House on the Left by Wes Craven. It's, there are three things about that movie that always bug me. Like, so, like, Last House on the Left is iconic, but I don't actually think it's a good movie. I think it's just, it's trashy, and but not in a good way. So you have all the rapey murder sequences that are really uncomfortable to watch. Then you have the soundtrack that looks like clearly coming out of, like, Woodstock. That is so jarring. And then you've got the bumbling cops in between.
Yeah.
And you're sitting there going like, okay, so now there's rape and murder, bubbly cops. Ooh, we're so chill now. And this movie's exactly the same.
And that's an example of, like, just immaturity as a director, I think,
yeah.
Like, at the time. Like, because he was obviously trying to counteract with the whole nastiness with, like, you know, well, I need to, like, calm him down in between, but maybe not done that in the correct way.
Yeah.
You know? But, like, and obviously in this movie, it's a bit, the tone is completely different, but... It's similar kind of feeling, though, isn't it? The fact that you've got, like, the crazy gore going on, and then you've just got this sweet scene where he's just looking after this girl and, like, you know.
You know, they're sharing a bed and it's lovely and they're talking about growing grass and cutting it down and having a job. And they're kind of like, oh, dear, what's happening next?
Anyone who likes sort of like horror comedy type, like Evil Dead type movies,
yes, totally,
would love this film.
Mm.
But anyone else won't like this film.
Like, yeah, no
it's,
one like, else
it's
will.
Really, really blunt, but like, that is pretty much it.
Yeah,
like, and so I'd definitely recommend it to anyone who loves those crazy, gory, funny movies.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because it's like Evil Dead 2 levels of gore.
Yeah.
But I think even more so because it's just ridiculous because it's so relentless. It's like being hit with a brick over and over again every 5 minutes.
Yeah.
It's a roller coaster ride that really makes you wish you could just like pause it for a minute just to reevaluate that you just saw someone just got cut open by a razor blade baseball bat.
Yeah.
And you're like, okay. So yeah, I think this movie is like a burning bus. It's like watching a car crash where you really shouldn't be watching it for so long, but you're so infatuated by how batshit it's getting. It's like a pileup. It keeps going and going and going and going. And by the end of it, when finally the last car finally hits the pile, and you're like, are there any more cars? No? Oh, thank God. That was awesome to look at.
I actually have a high level of respect for the fact that it starts so high and manages to keep it up, like manages to keep you guessing, keep like, well, now, how can it top it? And it does, like it's
keeps
great, yeah.
Going and going, and like literally, I think the best way is like it's the hold my beer movie. It's the thing like, oh, you think that's going to be worse? There is worse. There's more coming. There's more gore. There's more weirdness. There's more moments you have to pause and reevaluate what you just watched.
You call that a knife?
This is a knife. In this case, you call that a knife? This is a bus full of burning children.
It's like that, though, isn't it?
Ending with talking robots beating down a homeless man with a manhole cover on his head.
Yeah.
So that was Hobo with a Shotgun, a movie that is so batshit crazy that we now need to, I think I'm going to need some wine, sit in a corner and reflect about the world. So move on. Next time round, we've got something quite. We'll have something more mad and crazy and funky for the next time round. We're hoping to keep this going. I really hope you guys like this episode, and we'll keep in tune. So to end it all, guys, keep an eye on your trash. There might be something good in there. See you guys later.
Bye.
Has been an Enigmatic production. It's hosted by Johan Paul and music by Edward Harvey. If you like what you hear, subscribe to the podcast. We are on Google Play, iTunes, Stitcher Radio, and Buzzsprout. Share it, like it, write a review. For more information on our other projects, check out our website, www.enigmaticproductions.co.uk.
Thank you for listening to this podcast episode and hope you enjoyed it. If you did, please share it around with movie lovers you know, maybe add a star rating or write a good review. All of this helps with the algorithm and provides us with more opportunities to reach the ears to a whole new bunch of bad film fanatics. Want to find out more about us? Then head over to our socials where we provide sneak peeks and up-to-date news on everything nostalgic and trashy. You can find our Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter pages in the description. So please, follow us. See you next time, cinephiles.